Welcome back to the Placeholders Podcast, everybody. I'm Kaylee Fretz. Got a great show for you today. On today's show, can Sepkus do it? How to fix Britain. Annemiek's last ride and an agony aunt. Joining me today, welcome back to the show, Johnny Long.
Hello, hello.
Kit Nicholson, you look excited.
I'm excited.
Yeah, you look excited.
Yeah.
That Krabby's, it's doing the job.
Yeah, I'm bubbly. I'm going. I'm ready.
What do you got there?
This is Scotland's best grown-up soft drink.
Ooh.
Krabby's alcoholic ginger beer. It's great. It's not got alcohol in it. No, I'm working.
Right. It is. It's late in the evening for you, though.
It's okay. It's like 4%. Yeah.
Oh, that helps with the working.
Hardly counts. No. Well, and everybody you just heard there, welcome back to Placeholders, Ronan McLaughlin. It's a bit of a break there. You added one to the family, and you're back. Mm-hmm. Welcome back. How's your month?
Thank you. Exhausting, but pretty good. Yeah, we have a new addition to the family. What else happened in that month? Loads. I can't remember. But yeah, back at work, and I'm kind of wondering what's happened over here while I've been away, because this was a cycling podcast when I left, and you've gone all political there. You introduced how to fix Britain, which. I'm not sure we're qualified, but anyway.
I'm qualified, though. Absolutely. Okay, as an impartial observer, I think that I can probably provide some real insight.
You've listened to a podcast or two.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's get into today's show. We got to start with the biggest topic of the week, particularly if you are an American, a flag-waving American just like myself. Johnny, I have noticed that you've been enjoying the many America gifts that exist out there. There's an endless supply of just fantastic, deeply American gifts. Of course, what I'm talking about, the first red jersey, or the first Grand Tour leaders jersey for any American, I think, since Chris Horner? Yes, must be. And then if we go further than that, things get a little bit more complicated. So we'll just leave it at that. First one since Chris Horner, and it is none other than Durango local. From my hometown, Sepkus. And we're very excited about that. And we're going to talk a little bit about whether we think he can actually win this Vuelta a España. Because, well, there's a bit of debate here. He just got through kind of the biggest test, I think. He remains over a minute ahead of some key folks like Remco Evenepoel after the time trial, which was going to be sort of the biggest difficulty for him. We've got quite a lot of climbing still to go. The Angliru and a whole bunch of other pretty nasty climbs. The Tourmalet is in there. So what do we think, crew? Can Sepkus do it?
He wants to go first.
I thought you were just going to lean in and go...
You read your whole article yesterday, so I'm gonna let you go first. But I have a controversial take, but I'll let you go first.
Okay. I'm sure he can do it, and he could do it, but it doesn't mean that he will. But I'm gonna enjoy the ride of Americans getting excited about bike racing. Like I said in the article yesterday, the Wall Street Journal's Jason Gay, a colleague of Joshua Robinson, the Wall Street Journal. He put a paragraph in his like big NFL preview about whether Sepkus can win the Vuelta. So if this is like, if we're taking the barometer of the American press, then they are as excited as it's possible to be about the prospect of Kus winning the third best Grand Tour. I am just waiting for the inevitable, which is Evenepoel, Roglic, or Vingegaard stomping all over his and your country's dreams. It's just going to happen, isn't it? I think he's too nice to beat those three.
Possibly. Ronan, what's your take?
My take is I think he has a better chance to win it than Evenepoel has, which probably means he can win it. But I think it's going to come down to... And I actually think it's going to come down to what the three UAE riders within like 2.5 minutes do. If they start playing team games and Jumbo have to start playing team games... there's a lot of talk about Roglic and what do you call the guy that won the tour? I've been away for a while.
Vingegaard.
Ronan's got baby brain.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about those two won't want to steal victory from Kuss, which I think might actually be true. They might not want to, but if UAE start playing the team game and Yumbo have to start marking the team game, then they might not have a chance but to leapfrog unfortunate Kuss, who I think at some point is going to pay for the fact he's ridden three Grand Tours, with only really the Giro being on his plan at the start of the Giro. I think it was Giro Vuelta was planned, but then he got like 2.5 weeks through the Giro and they're like, okay, now you're going to do the Tour. And then he got like 2 days out from the Vuelta and like, right, now you're going to do the Vuelta. And I don't think at any point during that time did they say, right, now you're going to race for the win. So I don't know. It's probably different in Kuss's scenario because he won't have raced those other two races for the win. There would have been plenty of days where he maybe didn't go as deep as he would have done otherwise, but I still think it's going to catch up at some point, surely.
What I think is really, I don't know, compelling, though, is that we are in uncharted territory in multiple ways. First of all, we haven't seen somebody try and do this before, that we have done the research to find out. But also, you know, we know that Kuss is bloody good in the mountains, but for a long time, we haven't seen him try and do anything in a sustained way. So, you know, when he's supported his riders at the Giro or the Tour, he's had maybe 2 or 3 days full on and then a couple of days off. And he'd always have taken, you know, at the Giro particularly, he took the first week almost completely off. He was just fiddling about at the back of the peloton. So we haven't seen him try and do this really for in his career, especially as he, you know, he famously said goodbye to the GC effort a few years ago. So, I mean, I think it gives a really interesting edge to the Jumbo-Visma situation. I think I imagine a situation in the team bus as Kuss got to the finish, just like kind of the Richard Pluger and Marijn Zeeman, the two top dogs, just kind of looking at each other and just like, what do we do now? Because Kuss was expected to lose red.
Plan C.
Yeah, exactly. But what I think is great is that, you know, if he does win, which I'm much less doubtful than I was, but he'll have won by accident, which is so perfect for Kuss, I think. Not because he doesn't deserve it or because he didn't put in the work, but because he went into a breakaway as a kind of, you know, you've had a great year, mate. We're going to take it easy today. GC's going to back off, go and get a stage win, and then we'll go and win the race together. But he's now in a position where he might just do it completely by accident.
I'm going to contradict myself and then agree with myself again. But I just remembered he wasn't he in the top 10 of the Tour until he crashed with like a day or two to go. So not much easy days there to finish top 10 in the Tour. But then he has also performed exceptionally in the final weeks of Grand Tours. Pretty much every time he's been in a Grand Tour. Maybe not winning stages, but certainly I'm thinking back to 2020. Was it Col de Loos with Roglic where he like dropped?
Waited everybody for him.
Yeah, waited for Roglic, and you know he's done countless performances like that. So I think it's just that's the best thing about it. It's just too hard to call, isn't it?
Well, and some of the mountains in that final week are, I mean, it's pure climber stuff, right? It's Vuelta stuff. It's this is what we've come to expect in Spain, and it's some of the steepest, hardest climbs of any of the three Grand Tours. And he is a pure climber, and he just got through the time trial. So what does this say about Remco Evenepoel? If, I mean, we keep talking about him as like the third option to try to take on Tadej Pogacar and Jonas Vingegaard at their peak, right? And yet he is now about to possibly lose a Vuelta to someone who, as you put it, Kit, is kind of winning accidentally. That's not really the best look for the rider that we've kind of put out as the third option. Right?
Can I just add that I haven't done that? And then back off a little bit.
No, but I do agree with you. Like I kind of agree with you in that it's fully deserved and fully earned, but at the same time, the circumstances were largely accidental. Like they weren't planning this.
Oh no, I meant about stage. Remco being the extra string to the top dogs. Because I mean, to go back to the Vuelta being the climby race, last year's Vuelta wasn't really. Last year's Vuelta was one of those weird anomalies where they just throw in something a little bit different, and the stages were, you know, a lot of classic style stages in a way, and then there were a lot of climbs that ended in plateaus or that weren't particularly steep and they weren't stacked together, a bit like today's stage where there was flat, 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 and then like a, I don't know, like a race in the UAE when it goes up at the end but it's flat all the rest of the day. So I don't know, I mean, this, I think Remco is in a much better position this year in form terms than he was last year, probably. I think he's a much better rider already. I still don't think he's quite at the level, but I was very impressed with him over the weekend. You know, he knows that he's outnumbered, and his tactic to do that, to counter that while everyone's still together and they're not trying to rip his legs off in the third week, he's just setting a blistering pace on the front and saying, I dare you. And that's bold statement. And it's, I don't know, I think it's a mental game that he's doing pretty well.
The broader picture of what it means is that now Ineos are going to save a lot of money because now they just have to buy Sepkus instead of Remco Evenepoel. And then the Sepkus that we've all come to know and love with his, you know, good nature, laid back attitude, suddenly he becomes like the worst guy in the peloton in pursuit of sort of victory for the Death Star. Do we want him to win the Vuelta? Do we want to lose the Sepkus that we know? That's what we have to really ask ourselves.
I'm confident that won't happen. I think he'll be all right.
But that's the other interesting point. If he wins it, what happens next? Like, does he go for the Giro? Or does he go back to being a domestique for the two best GC riders on the... Well, two of the four, five, I don't know, best GC riders at Jumbo-Visma?
I think a similar question had crossed my mind, and I'm pretty sure Sepkus would just want to, like, go back to the day job.
Yeah.
And... You know,
I hate this.
Enjoy doing what he does so well.
I think you're probably right. I mean,
the only thing that might motivate him to keep chasing success like this is those huge bottles of champagne, because he clearly enjoys those.
I watch that like every day since it happened, and every day I always expect it to cut off earlier than it does. Like, you see his like Adam's apple.
I don't know how often it has happened, but it also happened after the time trial yesterday. Which
so
he did it again.
Sepkus, was the first time. Yeah.
What?
Sepkus spent. Well, one. This is extra funny because of what Richard Pluga was saying about alcohol at the Tour of
poison.
France.
Poison.
Where he called it poison, and he said that the reason why the French never win anything is because Marc Madio lets his mechanics drink beer, and then we turn around.
Big beers.
big beers. And then we turn around and we've got Sepkus just downing. Was it champagne, Prosecco?
Cava.
What are we going with here?
It's Cava.
Cava. Spain. It must be Cava because it's Spanish. Downing Cava, you know.
I mean, the skeptic in me says, is it 0%? I really don't want it to be.
Mm. I doubt it.
But
I doubt it.
It could be.
No, not
so I have a couple friends. So Sepkus did spend a semester as a college student, as a university student at the University of Colorado in Boulder. And I have a number of friends who overlapped with him by a little bit, and have plenty of stories that would indicate that he has been training for that particular part of the podium ceremony for some time. I'm not going to go into details.
Did he do a keg flip? I don't know what that is, but that's what you do in American colleges.
You could definitely
right?
do a keg stand. You could do a keg stand. You could do some of that. There are some stories of him arriving to the Saturday morning group ride in less than stellar condition.
Stella condition rather than
possibly,
Stella.
Possibly. Although we're talking college here, probably more like Natty Ice condition. and then proceeding to rip everyone's legs off regardless. Again, I think I don't want to dredge up some dirty laundry here, but he has been training for basically since the sort of late, 2008, 2009? I forget exactly when he would have been a freshman, but something around there. He's been prepared. He's been prepared all his life for this particular moment.
As far as I'm aware, there is some performance-enhancing aspect to alcohol consumption. So perhaps this is just the latest marginal gain that Jumbo are implementing. And while any of us are there sinking their recovery drinks, Jumbo Visma are getting half-plastered on the team bus.
Yeah, the weird...
My whoop would disagree with that.
Yeah.
The weird stuff in the bottles at the stage is what... UK university students would refer to as journey juice, where you like decant various alcohol and soft drinks into it, and then that's what you take on the bus ride into town.
These bottles after stages are fascinating me lately. Like,
all
the different teams have this black mixture on them.
It's like dark purple.
It looks like orc juice.
But why are they pouring into water bottles?
Like, we need to find this out. We need to
Maybe we shouldn't be talking about this here. Maybe we should be making a story of it. But
We've had a couple questions from listeners and readers on that topic. What are those bottlenecks? Because other people have noticed as well. So, yeah, here's what I'll say.
I don't know if this is a Vuelta related or those are Vuelta related questions or not, but it's something that's been for a couple of seasons across the entire season. Pretty much every team are taking like normal water bottles and either drinking the water or emptying the water, probably the latter, and pouring in these other mixtures. And it's like, if it's, I don't know, the whole thing just looks a bit dodgy, and I'm kind of wondering, why don't you just put it into recovery?
It must mean it's not dodgy, right?
Yeah, well, one would have to presume so, but I mean, still, why not just put it into one of your
branded, sponsored
beat-ons that you actually can't see what's inside it? Why is it on these water bottles is my main question. Why is it such a dark color, and what the hell is it?
Is it like carbonated or something where they have to take it out of the bottle at the last second and it just for optimal taste? I have no idea. Anyway, we'll go find out. We're going to send some messages around and figure out what those bottles are. We'll see if anyone will tell us, and if they won't, then we'll start.
That's a story
suspicious.
In itself.
We'll force
I don't believe we'll get an actual correct answer, or I don't believe I will entirely believe whatever answer we get. Because I know for a matter of fact that quite a lot of the drinks bottles that various sports stars use, a famous energy drink, blue and silver branding, doesn't usually have that drink inside the bottle. So I don't know if there's something opposite going on here. Like, I'm talking about Red Bull there, and you see every athlete from Wout van Aert to Max Verstappen and back to Tom Pidcock dancing about post-event with these Red Bull branded bottles, and I know for a fact there isn't Red Bull in those bottles.
How dare you?
So maybe the bottle that has no branding on it and is transparent does actually have Red Bull in it. I don't know.
Wow.
There's just lots of little bottles floating around cycling right now. Like, I watched a small bottle of something fall out of the back of I think it was David Gadou's pocket at the top of... Where were we when there was a Altiport this year?
Oh. When is there not an Altiport?
France.
Yeah.
Well, that's we were in France somewhere. Anyway, it was up there. Yeah, watch the bottles fall out of there, and then like the Swanee ran back and got it. They care about these bottles.
It's always a good sign when there's loads of little bottles floating around in cycling.
And that they can't leave them on the side of the road.
Mm-hmm.
The connotation here, for anybody that isn't aware, I don't know if connotation is the right word or not, but anyway, the problem here might be that in a bygone era, we had so-called finished bottles, which were highly illegal, whether you're racing a bike or just happen to be at a nightclub somewhere at 5 a.m.
Operating heavy machinery, perhaps?
Either way, they contained prohibited substances. And now, you know, the flip side of that is that you can get things as simple as magnesium in test tube shaped bottles that looks rather dodgy, but it is just magnesium. Some caffeine gels aren't actually gels, they're just caffeine liquids that come in similar bottles also. So there it would just be nice to know what's in the bottles after the finish line and what's in the bottles in the pocket.
To bring it back to the champagne though, or the carver, Philippe Ganna's attempt was alarming.
It was alarming.
Especially as he's won a lot, so you know, you think. I suppose he was feeling the pressure after Kuss had.
And he's a big lad.
Yeah, he's got somewhere to put it. Kuss hasn't.
Did you see the Vuelta's very thirsty Instagram post?
No, I don't want to actually. My life is fine. It's just I knew that.
It's from the time trial. It's just butts.
Oh.
It's just zoomed in on butts.
I thought you were going to say it was like the champagne stuff, but butts.
No,
is
no,
fine.
No.
Maybe we
butts
should check
fine.
For
I mean,
the Vuelta's own
in,
finishing
in,
bottles.
Like. You guys should go look at it.
The Vuelta's on one this year.
Yeah.
It was like Ghana's butt. Here we go. It's a reel. It's just butts. And it says nice views today.
Oh dear. I mean, it's just
emojis.
A time trial video until you get the caption. Yeah.
Those emojis should never be used by anyone.
You're just never happy, kid. Photo camera is in front of the rider, they're getting drafted, it's behind the rider, you're not happy with that.
Yeah, come there's on. nothing bad about that video until you see the caption.
I'm not opposed to this video in any way. I just think it's funny that the Vuelta social admin was having a thirsty morning. And
Second week of a grand tour, missing home.
Yeah. It's great. It's great. All right.
One last thing on Kuss. You probably heard it, but he mentioned that it was the first time he didn't get caught in the time.
Yeah, that was good.
Which is even better when you think that he was the last person to start. So.
Absolutely zero chance of him getting caught in time trial. He did actually do a pretty good TT, though. Like, he had a pretty solid time trial. So did Marc Soler, which is very interesting. Yes. I thought. And,
but, well, I mean, that level of intelligence in the joke in a post-race interview tells me that he is actually quite still fresh and probably will win this welter.
That's a good analysis.
Yeah, I think he's a bit of an alien. I think we don't know what he's capable of, so that is a good reason why he may just win it.
Yeah.
Maybe if he hadn't done all those keg stands in college, he could have like won the tour. That's all I'm thinking about now.
he just to balance things off before we leave this, so he was distanced on, was it Saturday or Sunday? The last time they went uphill hard on the muddy stage, I think.
Distanced by about 4 seconds, and nobody was really trying.
Kit, it all adds up.
I don't think that stage is a good gauge of anything, frankly. But yeah,
no, because you put it on the Angliru, and that 4 seconds could be 4 minutes.
Yeah,
it's true.
Can we clip up all the beer talk and email it to Richard Plugger? I just want to see his like brain explode.
All right, so before we move on from Sepp, we must now make predictions. Kit.
Oh, will he win or not?
Will Sepp Kuss win?
I thought you were predicting the winner. Would that not be better?
Nope. Will Sepp Kuss win? We only care about Sepp Kuss on this podcast.
I don't know. Okay. So you just want a yes or no? You don't want who's going to win
just
it instead?
Yes or no.
Okay.
And no explanation, just a yes or no.
I'm thinking far too hard about
this. Yeah, we really care about this answer. It literally holds no value whatsoever.
No, I'm going to say no because it's in character.
All right, Ronan, yes or no?
I'm going to agree with Kit.
No. Johnny?
I wish I was wrong. I hope I am.
Yeah,
wrong.
Likewise. That's why I thought so long.
I'm going to say yes because I want to send so many of the American gifts I've found out into the world. They're so good. You guys have so many flags.
We have a lot of flags.
We should have started a flag business, not a media business.
I'm going to say yes because I got to root for the hometown hero. I got to do that. Like, I'm watching all my friends post them up on Instagram. This is the most exciting thing that Americans have had in cycling in quite some time. We've been downtrodden, our poor tiny nation, downtrodden in the pro cycling landscape.
And it wasn't even your fault.
Finally,
was it?
We have some hope. We finally have some hope.
I hope you're right.
Yeah, me too.
I really think he won't win it. Not because he's not capable of winning it, but just because Jumbo have been so flawless this year, and that's just not Jumbo. So I reckon UAE or someone's going to win this world. Despite the fact that Jumbo have the three best riders.
Wow.
Something just has to go. Like, they can't go three Grand Tours in a season without like having a pit stop at the wrong second or the Saturday or whatever. You know, something that was the director... back to 020. Anyway, you know what I mean.
Kaylee, if Kuss gets close or he like does it, are you going to start putting up like banners in Durango? Is there someone already you think will start doing that?
I think there's 100% chance of some sort of banner being hung across Main Street.
Will you have a Sepp Kuss day?
Probably.
Will you start liking the Vuelta, Kaylee?
No. You all think I don't like the Vuelta. I like the Vuelta. I like the Vuelta. It's just smaller.
I like the idea if Kuss wins it or like there's a final stage that they decide to put the coverage on at like an Outback Steakhouse or whatever you guys have over there, and there's just like all these dudes watching Sepp Kuss win the Vuelta. Watching parties.
It could be the Diamond Bell Saloon, perhaps, downtown. I don't think they have televisions. No, actually, the place to go watch Sepp Kuss win the Vuelta would be head down to the ranch, El Rancho, downtown.
El Rancho.
So perfectly American.
We'll do an official watch party there. All right, I am cutting us off. We're going to take a quick break. Got a couple other news hits to get into. The Tour of Britain is also happening right now. It's a bit of a weird one. I mentioned at the opener of the show, we were going to fix Britain here. And what I actually want to talk about is, so we've got like a string of sprint stages. Olav Kooi has won 4 as of recording. Could be more by the time you actually listen to this. Doesn't seem like the best way to put together an exciting bicycle race. Any suggestions for the organizers? Johnny, Kit?
A lot of people have been piling into the organizers, which is just unfair, but that's the internet. It's really hard for them to actually organize the race because of the costs of getting roads closed or like the councils or areas that will actually have the race. So people were saying, oh, why don't we find some more sort of uphill kilometers or whatever? But the fact is that those areas, maybe they don't want the race or it's too expensive. It's the same with having time trials. Like putting a time trial on and closing like a route is just too much money, especially because the Tour of Britain don't have a sponsor this year. So they're doing the best they can. They've got Wout van Aert at the bike race, Tom Pidcock. But the big problem is they don't have any bonus seconds. I mean, Olav Kudre would probably have an unassailable GC lead by this point. So maybe it's a good thing. But until probably stage 8, like 50 riders are all going to be on the same time. And I can't tell if I like it or not.
I think it's... I think it needs to be applauded that they're actually keeping this race going because it is incredibly difficult to get any road racing happening in the UK these days. And then I think the biggest problem it faces this year is that it's after the Worlds, where in other years, a lot of riders were actually turning to the Tour of Britain for their Worlds warm-up or final prep. There was some stat that used to float about the amount of Worlds winners who did the Vuelta, and then that like seemingly from Kwiatkowski in 2014 or something, that flipped to the Worlds winners doing Tour of Britain. And with no Worlds this year, I think it's affected both the Vuelta and Britain, if I'm honest. And I don't know, there's just something about this year as well with, I don't know if it's just us or if it's everybody or what, but Tour de France Femme, Worlds, you know, that whole block is just like, to sit down and watch more racing on TV now is not easy.
Yeah, you need a really good reason. That's not quite it, but you need something to tune into.
Yeah, and I normally do, like I did the Tour of Britain 3 times, so I love the race, have fond memories of it, and usually tune in for that reason alone. But
yeah, it's also great to see with the support on the side of the road, because that won't change. And you know, you get people decorating their gardens and making huge banners for the local riders. So it is reasonably well supported by the cycling fans. But yeah, I mean, they have to do rolling road closures to make it viable, and it's just, I don't know. It's a shame that it's had to be this way, and that they couldn't have a hilly stage interspersed with the sprint stages. I'm sure it just comes down to, you know, what's going on in the areas that they're going to, and all the logistics that are involved. But yeah, we need a big one-day classic or something just to get the UK excited and public, local councils excited, and just, I don't know,
Ride London was so exciting.
No, I don't mean Ride London. It was better than the first 4 stages of the Tour of Britain, though, with the... but yeah, I don't know, bring a race up to Scotland and have some gravel sections.
Yeah, or some... Yorkshire Dales or something.
Yeah, yeah.
The last time I did Tour of Britain started in Peebles.
There we go. That was, there's some lovely riding around.
I mean, back then the complaint was that we were doing longer, we spent more time doing transfers than
that's an issue.
Stages. And before that, if I remember right, like when the Tour of Britain was sort of resurrected in 2004 or something, the complaints were about traffic and road closures and roads not really being closed and riders meeting oncoming traffic. So it's always been difficult to organize a bike race on, you know, in Britain.
We're not a cycling nation. That's the big problem.
We do love to complain as well.
Yeah. And people hate cyclists.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this all sounds quite familiar for the American scene, which is why we race around office parking lots.
Yeah. Remember Brits, it could always be worse.
Johnny, you've been to Tour of Britain previously.
Yeah, I did me and my dad did the whole thing as a holiday 2 years ago. It's great fun.
Perfect. So you did the whole Ross this year as a holiday with myself. So I want to know which is better, the Tour of Britain or Ross.
Ooh.
My dad is in the other room, and I hope he's not listening. But the Ross was great.
Yeah,
the Ross is great. But the one thing I do like about the Tour of Britain when you're watching on telly, though, is just seeing all of these, like, there's at least a few superstars on the line, on the start line, and they're just like riding past like normal everyday high street brands, like big Sainsbury's and stuff like that. And I just wonder if they like, if then they learn what those things are, the things that are normal to all Brits. Like, Wout van Aert, does he know what a Sainsbury's is now? And for some reason, I'm like, he must go to, and like in the evening, he goes to bed in like a Travelodge.
This is very low stakes. It's not.
I would class it as whimsy.
That's a perfect word for it.
I'm pretty sure Tour Britain introduced me to Premier Inn hotels.
Beautiful.
So that probably does.
Exactly. See?
Probably does happen. They, like, they've stuck out in my mind since Tour Britain. They never sponsored Tour Britain or anything, just we stayed there so often.
It's British culture. Like, that's what it is.
Costa Express self-service coffee machines in the receptions. And yeah,
that used to be high tech. About 10 years ago, that was the cutting edge of technology.
The primary source of most of the Costa cups that I have in my house. But since then, like, it's one of the main reasons I only ever stay in Premier Inns.
Do your sort of budget hotel options have the automatic waffle machines that are popular in America?
No.
Or are you missing out?
We don't eat waffles. We eat proper breakfast.
We eat crumpets.
We don't have pudding for breakfast, Kaylee. We have real food.
Waffles are delicious.
I think a lot of them do have those automatic machines, but then, you know, hangovers and vomit and stuff, and yeah, they're eventually they're not there anymore.
Last bit of news for this week, and we're not going to spend too much time in this because there's going to be a fair amount of time spent on it on Wheel Talk this week. But this is Annemiek van Vleuten's last race on right now. The CMEC Ladies Tour is on right now, and she put kind of an emotional Instagram post up the other day about like wearing the earrings that her father gave her and how far she's come, and talking about how she, you know, I think this is also one of her first races. It was under a different name.
Yeah, it was
at the
her
time.
First race, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, or first pro race maybe. Under a different name at the time, but that's what the sort of race has turned into now. And yeah, it's an emotional moment for one of the greatest cyclists ever, and certainly one of the greatest cyclists of the last couple of years. So again, there's going to be a heck of a lot more on that over on Wheel Talk, but worth a mention here on the placeholders and sort of tipping our hats to Annemiek's retirement.
Is it just me, or does it feel a little bit hard to believe? Is it one of those like I'll believe it when I see it?
Yeah, so, I've kept expecting her to say, actually, I'm going to do one more year. But the more she keeps saying, posting these videos and pictures, it's like, yeah, maybe she's actually going to do it.
Now she's got to go race gravel with Alejandro Valverde next year.
Yeah, get some brown shorts on.
You know, got to get the brown shorts on, drop the field by like 15 minutes and win a very low stakes gravel race. That's how you keep it going in your 40s, apparently.
Sounds pretty fun, actually. Yeah, well, kudos to her, and I guess congratulations to wrapping things up. I think if she'd won Worlds or something, she might have come back. But as it is, I think she's fully ready to retire.
Hey there, I'm Dane Cash. You may have seen my byline over at escapecollective.com, and I'm also a podcast host, and I'm taking the opportunity provided by this little break in the action of the podcast you're listening to right now to tell you that if you like bike racing and you want some pretty serious analysis, you should check out the Pretty Serious Bike Racing Podcast. Every week, I chat with my co-host Cosmo Catalano and a few other extremely talented analysts, and we break down all the big stories in the pro racing scene. You hear from former road pros like Abby Mickey, Ruth Winder, and Rona McLaughlin, and from insightful cycling journalists like Kaylee Fritz, Johnny Long, and Kit Nicholson. We try to dive deep into the racing action to talk tactics, smart moves by some riders, questionable decisions by others, unheralded members of the pro peloton, and a lot more. And despite my best efforts to keep us very serious, you can rely on Cosmo and the rest of our crew to keep the serious level down just to where it's just pretty serious, the perfect amount of serious. You can find the pod on the main Escape Collective podcast feed, and we hope you'll check it out. All right, back to the show.
Welcome back. We're on to everyone's favorite segment of the show. I don't know if it is or not. It's the listener questions time. We really like this part of the show because we get to answer your questions. These questions come in from our members, Escape Collective members, via Discord or via email. Of course, you can email Johnny, Johnny jonny.long at escapecollective.com. That's J-O-N-N-Y, no H. Make sure you include his
actual email address. I didn't
think. Oh, yeah, I've been getting emails. I was thinking we should probably also set me up with a jonny.long at escapecollective.com.
What happened when I was away for suddenly giving out...
just in case. We should just do that.
I mean, it would make a lot of sense. You'd probably get a lot more emails that way. Anyway, you can email your questions to Jonny. You must include your member number. So yep. If you are not a member, we're just going to get, even if your question is hilarious and we love it, we're not answering it. We're putting our foot down. You got to be a member. So you got to include your member number when you email Jonny. You can also hit the member Discord, of course.
Actually, we're going to go one step further. Questions that we like that come from non-members, we're going to pass them to members to send to us.
Yes.
Those members will be credited.
And then I'm going to sign your email up for loads of mailing lists that you don't want to receive.
There you go. That is the retribution. So we have both a listener question today and we have an agony aunt coming up right afterward. Jonny, let's kick off the listener question. What is our listener question and from whom today?
Today, our listener question comes from Rich B, and he asks, who would win in a fight wearing cycling cleats, Kaylee Fretz or Jonny Long? Also, same question for all combinations of staff. And if I was good at maths, I think that would probably produce a result of like more than 1,000 matchups. So
maybe we won't go through everybody.
No.
But we could go through the people on this podcast for sure. So obviously, Jonny, you and I don't think we can answer this. It's got to go to Ronan and Kit. Yeah.
Can I clarify one thing? Wearing cycling cleats, does that mean cycling shoes with cleats on them? Or does that mean only wearing cycling
cleats?
Oh, yes,
Mr. Pedant. Love it.
Wearing your damn cycling shoes, Ronan. Come on.
Yeah, now I want to fight you, Ronan.
So who wins?
Important to know.
Kit, who wins?
What sort of fight are we talking? Hand-to-hand? Swords? I don't know.
That was unconvincing.
I think it was for those who couldn't
based on what Kaylee's just done. I'd say Jonny.
Kaylee was
also
not...
Jonny's tall.
I think Kaylee's a bit scrappy. I reckon he can hand himself in a little scrap though. I can see the red mist descending. I don't think I have that.
Arms.
I don't have that in me.
I got reach.
I have another important background question. Have either of you ever been in a fight?
No, of course not. I do. I'm on a podcast.
So laid down, he's horizontal.
No one who's been on a podcast ever been in a fight. That's just the rule.
Well,
have you ever been fought at?
No.
Fought at? Love that.
I've been fought at, but in third grade.
Yeah.
I don't think it counts.
Did you fight back?
Yeah. How long ago was this? 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
You versus a third grader.
Well, I fought back. I think it got separated by the teacher relatively quickly. So it didn't really get into it. But I was definitely fought out. I can't remember why.
I think Jonny won because Kelly, I know you use Luke Keogh pedals and cleats and you would get off to a good start because you're more used to wearing cycling shoes. Jonny doesn't have that much experience in the dance required to stay upright in cycling shoes. So you get off to a good start, but then the little grippers from the Keogh cleats would rip loose with all the sort of jumping about and all, as they do. Then those things are lethal slippy, so you would end up on the floor, and then it's Johnny's fight at that point.
I think
also, despite not riding that much, my like the actual cleat bit is always like very run down, so it would just be like running around in just the, like without the attachment bit. I mean, I'm trying to talk tech here and I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, to
be
honest.
Doing well.
So it'd be more slippy, I reckon. I reckon you'd have more grip.
I mean, I personally think Jonny would win. You've got a size advantage on me, although I do probably have a reach advantage.
Yeah.
Really long ape index. It'd be close. It'd be a tough battle. I think.
Next year at the tour, maybe we just, you know, get to week two and we decide to answer these questions
solve this
for
problem.
Real. Yeah. Ian definitely won't be into it.
No.
But he can referee and commentate.
I think he wouldn't be able to watch. Report. I think he's such a sweet, sensitive soul that he wouldn't even be able to watch or be in the vicinity of any sort of physical altercation.
Well, thanks to Rich B for the question. I think Jonny, to be honest, I think Jonny would probably win for mostly the reasons that Ronan is mentioning. My look cleats would just start disintegrating. And then what are you going to do from there?
It's an impossible to answer because I can't imagine either of you fighting. with anybody, not just with each other.
I don't know. I feel like I feel like I saw Johnny come pretty close to fighting some Danes.
Oh, I did. Yeah.
And that's the other reason why I think Johnny would take
We've
it.
Only got that, one
like, I saw the red mist descend.
That's true. Actually, that night at the Tour ready. I was ready because he was very rude to Josh.
He was extremely rude to Joshua Robinson of the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
And we will not stand for that. So Johnny is the winner. Thanks to Rich B for the question. We have an agony aunt. I'm still not entirely clear what this is. But it's a Dear Abby, I think, is what we decided is for the American listeners out there.
Okay.
So what's our question, Johnny?
Okay, so I'm going to preface this with saying we got a bunch of emails sent in, which is really nice to see. And I think due to the demographics of our audience, a lot of them are obviously going to come from guys. And a lot of them, because we've like asked for sort of domestic issues or just issues in life, a lot of them are like from husbands about wives, not like bad things, but just like it's from that stance. And so I want to ask that if there are female listeners out there, please send some in so this doesn't just become like a sort of Jeremy Clarkson-esque phone-in where it's just people asking for advice about their wives. But it's a good dilemma. And seeing as half of this podcast have wives, I feel like maybe we'll get some good advice. But it's a good dilemma, so I'll stop rambling and get into it. Okay, it's from... I'm actually not going to say the name because I feel like that might deter people from sending in the future. I'll say it's from Mark. Thank you, Mark, for emailing in. Okay. Mark writes, I've apparently, with quotation marks around the apparently, got an agreement with my wife of 17 years that if I get another bike, we have to get another dog. We already have two Labradors and I have two bikes, plus one of my son's bikes. You know, he's moved out, so left the bike, so, and he's made it fit for him, but technically still only has two bikes, which I think, you know, we'll referee this. That's a valid. Yeah. There is the possibility that they could like be an opportunity to adopt another dog. But Mark is assumes the agreement goes in the opposite direction too. But at this point, he can't afford another bike. So now he's got three options. Option number one, accept that my wife wears the trousers and let her have the additional hound. Option two, let her have the additional dog and keep a bike in credit. Number three, dig my heels in and say no, as another dog will likely prevent me being able to afford the additional bike in the short to medium term. He wrote dog as the additional dog, but I think he meant additional bike. I like this because I like this email from Mark because while being like a decent dilemma, there is like a lot of truth written in this email. Like this is not made up for our benefit. This is something he has been toiling with.
I like the idea of a dog on credit. A credit dog.
Or a credit bike, yeah.
Credit bike, yeah.
My parents actually did this. We had one Labrador and my mum really wanted a second Labrador. My dad said, well, if you get a new dog, then I get a new car. Now, this was delivered with the assumption that my mum wasn't really being serious. But literally 30 minutes later, she'd found a dog nearby. And a week later, we had an extra dog. And 2 years later, my dad had a new car. So the credit thing does work.
I was a little bit confused, Johnny. Mark, I thought you were going to say Mark was okay with getting an extra dog so long as he got an extra bike, but he doesn't actually want an extra dog. Is that the gist of this?
Yeah, and I'm not even sure if he wants an extra bike, to be honest. It sounds like the sort of situation where he's made this disagreement, so like, and now it's like an arms race.
He's going to cut off his nose to spite his face. He's like, well, you're getting something I don't want, so I'm getting something I don't want.
He's stuck in a unique bind.
Yeah, it's a really unique bind.
Contractual.
It's like a Cold War nuclear arms race where he's Russia and he's just like, well, I got to get another bike because they've got another dog.
I thought he wanted an extra bike but didn't want an extra dog, and I thought the solution might have been to lease the bike because then technically he's not the owner of the bike, the leasing company is. But if he doesn't want the bike and he doesn't want the dog... I mean,
he must want the bike. Who doesn't want the bike?
Yeah, I think he'd like it, but it's just the cost, because he realizes that if he has another dog as well, like paying for three dogs, that's mental. And then on top of the bike, I imagine that would impair his quality of life quite a bit.
How expensive is a dog?
Well, once you've got two, a third one, it's probably not going to be that different.
That's
but
true.
They do cost a lot to insure.
Yeah.
If you do that, which
to even, you have to insure a dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if they get sick, don't they?
Yeah, oh, it's like bills. Medical insurance
and
for
then,
your dog.
And then mm-hmm. it, going and getting them vaccines and stuff.
Just to be clear, the NHS doesn't cover dogs.
No.
So you have the American healthcare system, but only for dogs?
Yes.
Yeah, pretty much.
Well, all animals.
All animals, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. I still think that the bike on credit, get the dog, three dogs, you got economies of scale coming into play at that point. You're buying the big bulk dog food bag. You've got all these other things going on. I think you can do three dogs, and then somewhere down the line you now have a new bike in your back pocket at whatever point you so desire. Maybe there's some new technology coming down the pike that we don't know about yet. You're really gonna want this new bike. It's in your back pocket. That's what I think.
I hope he's not hoping for actual serious solutions here, because first of all, the one I already proposed, leasing the bike, do not do that. secondly, this next proposal I think solves the whole equation, because if he had three dogs and had to get an extra bike, surely the solution is to get a cargo bike, and then he can take his three dogs in the cargo bike.
They're
and who
Labradors.
Who doesn't want a cargo bike? I mean, you could take them in the cargo bike to the place that you want to go for a walk. You get a bike ride. You get a new bike, you get an extra dog. It's all justifiable.
And then you launch an Instagram page of dogs in a cargo bike.
You build that
account. You then start
cargo
selling
dogs.
Like affiliate brand deals, whatever. And then you have the money to then buy as many bikes and dogs as you want. And then next thing you know, $1 billion company.
You're running your own podcast and agony aunt because it worked out for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we solved it. There you go, Mark. There's your a big like bucket cargo bike, like a Bockfiets, right?
Yeah.
So you can stick all the dogs in there.
When it's successful, send us your Instagram handle.
Yeah. Keep us updated. Yeah. Keep us updated on that. I hope that also hasn't put people off sending dilemmas in. Maybe this is our one and only agony aunt. I was also thinking
I won't be here every week, so the answers will be better in future.
No, we need more agony aunts. We need more of your dilemmas. Make sure you email them over to Johnny.
I was also thinking that we could have branded this segment agony aunt, but spelt it like Nikias aunt, and then read the questions out in a German accent. But I thought that was too much. But I just wanted to let you know that option was on the table, and I chose the sane path.
I think if Nicholas Arndt rides the tour next year, then we come to the tour armed with questions that we get him to read.
Yes, yes.
And record them, and then we use them for the rest of the
that's
year.
That's so good.
All right, we have a plan. Thanks, Mark, for sending in your question. If you have a dilemma that you need us to solve for you, send those emails over to johnny.long@escapecollective.com or drop them into the thread on the member Discord. We'll answer your questions in the coming weeks.
I've just realized the problem with giving out Johnny's email address and that doing that, you've also given out the format for our email addresses. So you have actually given out everybody's email address.
If you hadn't said that, Ronan, we could have gotten away with it.
I'm just trying to fill your inboxes in the way that my inbox is filled.
I don't think it's particularly difficult to unpick. If somebody really wanted to get all of us, they'd be able to work it out.
Plus, Ronan, your name's kind of confusing. Are there two dots in it? We don't know. Could be. Is it MC.Lachlan?
No comment.
there's an umlaut over the U. That's all I'll reveal.
Yep. All right, email Johnny, and we're going to take a quick break and be back with your weekly pain. Welcome back, everybody. It is time for your weekly pain. For those who don't know what this is our weekly quiz show. And we are keeping track of points over the episodes. So current standings, and I will remind you that an overall win for each episode is worth 3 points. A draw is worth 1 point. a loss, 0 points. It's going to get a little bit weird with three people on today answering the questions, but we're just going to go with it anyway. Current standings, Dane and Kit are tied with 4 points. Of course, Dane's not going to get any points today. We've got Johnny with 3 points, just behind Ian with 1 point, and Ronan, of course, with zero thus far. Opportunity to come back today.
I mean, I've got a zero so far. That isn't all that bad. I can only really lose from here, and that I've still got zero at the end, and it's actually been on a podcast that is looking very bad.
I believe in you. So for today's show, because we have three contestants, we're going to do a little round robin, and I am going to select a category of rider or team or something like that. Our contestants must guess or come up with somebody in that category, and we will go around in a circle until somebody can't anymore. Once you can't provide an answer, you're out. Last one standing wins that game. We're going to play three games. Whoever has the most points at the end of that takes all the marbles.
Because I'm so competitive, I know I'm going to be so annoyed when I don't win.
Yeah, I can feel my heart rate rising.
They all lean forward at their desks, over top of their microphones. All right, so we will go around a circle, and we're going to start with Johnny, this one, and then Ronan, and then Kit. We're going to go around that circle until you cannot provide me with a name. The category is, as of stage 11, that is Wednesday's stage of the Vuelta a España, riders in the top 20 on GC. Johnny, you're first.
Sebastian Kuss.
Sebastian Kuss is indeed in the top 20. Ronan.
Juan Ayuso.
Juan Ayuso is indeed in the top 20.
Primoz Roglic.
Roglic is. Johnny.
Remco Evenepoel.
Yep. Ronan.
Why can I not think of any riders? The guy that won the tour, Vingegaard.
Vingegaard is indeed in the top 20. Kit?
Lenny Martinez.
Lenny Martinez is indeed in the top 20. Johnny?
Geraint Thomas.
He barely. He is indeed in the top 20. 18th place for Geraint Thomas. Ronan?
Almeida.
Almeida is indeed 6th place. Kit?
Vlasov.
Vlasov is in 10th. Yep. Johnny?
Marc Soler.
In 2nd. I was waiting for that one. Ronan?
There's
only a couple left.
Hugh Carthy.
Hugh Carthy is indeed. Wow. Nice one.
Only because he was on the attack today.
He's in 13th at the moment, 456 down. Kit?
Enric Mas.
Mas is in 9th. Johnny.
Kian Uttebrücke.
This is actually quite impressive, the three of you. We're going to get all of them.
Yeah, we've been working.
That is correct. Ronan.
Landissimo.
Oh.
Landa is in 11th.
Oof.
I'm pretty sure that's me checked out now, though.
Kit.
This is tough now.
Do, do, do.
Trying to think through the teams.
Mm.
3, 2, 1. Kit's out. We're over to Johnny. What do you got?
Shit. I'm going to go with... I don't even know.
It's kind of rando, so... At yeah. this point.
I'm going to go with, what about Nicolas Prudhomme for AG2R?
No.
Oh, Ronan.
You're out. All right.
What a
Ronan,
great debut.
Ronan, all you need
oh, yeah,
is
gotta,
to give me one.
One this time.
Oof. Yeah,
yeah, Lenny Martinez has been guessed.
Oh, yeah, I did. Shaking my head.
We've got most of them, haven't we? You said Landismo. Mikel Landa. Oh, I think I know now.
One, two.
Bahrain. What do you call it? Yeah. Mid from Bahrain?
Yeah.
What do you call it? He's had loads of time.
That's true. He's wearing 41 as well.
Two, one. All right, yeah, so this point is available for if anybody can just yell one out at me right now.
Go on, Kit.
Is it Caruso?
Oh, I was going to go Santiago Buitrago.
Oh.
Caruso is not in the top 20. Buitrago is. Point well done, Johnny. To Johnny. Congratulations. Buitrago is still in. All right, so Riders, you all missed Steph Crass.
Oh.
Augusto Rubio.
I'm doing that really annoying thing. Where you just, I had it on
Christian Rodriguez and Remy Rojas. Rojas. He's French, so yeah. Mm. That's your top. He's in 20th at the moment.
We did pretty good.
We're only gonna play two games today. I've just decided. We're gonna have one more here, and your category is. Your category is, and we're going to start with Ronan this time because Johnny took the point last time. Your category is riders who started the Vuelta whose last name begins with B.
Nice. I like this.
This is a hard one.
Bardet.
Bardet is one. Kit.
Buitrago.
Buitrago is another.
Think. Oh, what's his name? The bloke who's born. Can't remember his name. I'm going to go for. Three. He's definitely not in the Vuelta. Clément Berthet for AG2R.
Not in the Vuelta. Johnny is out.
I'm out.
Ronan.
Some people may know that I was actually at the first stage of the Vuelta, and I was specifically paying a lot of attention to the Ineos Grenadiers. And as such, I know that Egan Bernal is at the Vuelta.
Oh my God.
Correct. Correct, Ronan. Kit?
I can't remember his first name, but it doesn't matter. Bonnet?
It's
Thomas Bonnet?
Yes, Thomas Bonnet. Total Energies. Back to you, Ronan.
First name or second name?
Second name, last name.
Has to be surname.
Yep, surname.
And it has to be B.
Yep. Just buying time now.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm tapping out.
Kit, can you give me one for all the marbles? No, just half the marbles. There's a lot left.
Is there a lot left?
Yeah. There are 17.
Oh, I've
total.
Just thought of one. I've just thought of one.
I'm
too late, Johnny.
I'm pretty sure I've thought of one also.
If Kit doesn't have one, we'll go back to you, Ronan.
I don't know why his name's popped into my head. It might be, he might have been at the Tour of Britain, but Cyril Barthes.
Oh, that, yeah. He's a big B guy.
Cyril Barthes is. In the Vuelta.
Oh, what a shout, Kit. That is great.
Unbelievable. That is knowledge there.
All right, Kit. So we have 1 point to Kit, 1 point to Johnny. That is a draw. Unfortunately, Ronan, you remain at 0 points. Both of them get one out of today's weekly pain.
I told you it could only get worse. I was going to think of, because he always strikes me as such a... peculiarity, I can't remember his first name, but Ball, he rides for like one of the, yes. The Dutch guy who rides for one of the Spanish teams.
That's who I was trying to remember, because I remember when he's the one, he's the lowest altitude guy at the Vuelta.
Yeah.
Because it's minus one meter of altitude he was born at.
Yeah, he probably doesn't live there. I think he lives in Spain now. That's what he's always with Spanish teams.
Yeah, Burgos.
Yeah. I've seen him at
all
the,
of the bees.
B names, we had Baggioli, Balderstone, Ballerstedt, Barcelo, Bardet, Barneccia, Barth, Battistella, Bayer, Berhe, Bernard, Bidard, Bissiger, Boll, Bonnet, Bouchard, Buchmann, Buitrago, And that's it.
So quite a lot of beans.
So annoyed I didn't get Bissiger.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should have got Bissiger there, Brennan.
Hey, you don't know what the pressure's like when you're like on screen and they're asking questions and you're supposed to come up with an answer.
I know exactly what the pressure's like.
Yeah, you do, yeah. That's right.
Why do you think I host the game? I don't have any interest in it pointing the other direction. All right. Thanks to everybody for joining us on this week's episode of the Placeholder Podcast. Thanks to Johnny. Thanks to Ronan. Thanks to Kit. Thanks to all of our members out there. You make this possible. If you're not already a member, head over to escapecollective.com/join. It is very reasonably priced, and you get lots of things. You get the continued existence of this podcast. You also get access to all of our fantastic content on escapecollective.com. You get amazing galleries from the Made Handmade show. You get all of our Vuelta coverage. You get all sorts of stuff. So head over to escapecollective.com/join right now. And we'll be back next week with another episode. Place on the podcast. Bye-bye.